Oh, hey, Ironhead.
Yo.
I've got some bad news.
All right.
So last night, Al came over and he said that I talked to him about his contract and you know, continuing to work with us. And he said he didn't want to discuss the terms. He said he's just done. He said he's going to move on. He said he's going to take his talents to Tampa Bay for another podcast down there that has, like, he said, more skilled talent.
Was it the drug testing that we wanted him to undergo?
Well, I think all podcasts have mandatory drug testing, so I don't think that was it.
Oh, I've listened to some of them. I'm aware.
I think there might be a relationship issue. But anyway, Al's gone.
Weep.
Except some good news. I got Al back on the phone before he went to Tampa. And we ironed it out. We worked out the details. And I'm proud
that's just cruel.
The return of Al.
Warning. The hosts of this program are not broadcast professionals. They have no idea what they're doing. They are bad at this. One of them uses swear words. A lot. All complaints about this show are correct. You have been warned. This is your last chance to download a real podcast. Okay, you asked for it. Here are Dave Brown and Iron Mike Irons. This is Entitled Town.
Thank you, Al. We appreciate you so much. Sometimes in life, you don't know what you have until a long time has passed. But we always know with Al exactly how we feel. So I'm glad to have him. I'm glad to be here with you. I'm Dave Brown. This is Entitled Town. Iron Mike Irons is here. I don't know how he feels about this Al situation. But I do know that unlike Al, the Patriots were not able to work something out, and Tom Brady has moved on. He's going to play for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. There's no more guessing. There's no more mind games. There's no more, figuring out prep schools in Nashville. There's no more best friend Mike Vrabel. There's no more perfect fit for the Chargers. There's no more deposing Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones in New York. Dak Prescott got franchised in Dallas, and
don't forget about the made-up stuff with the Niners.
Oh my goodness, the 49ers, and Jimmy Garoppolo is not coming here right now, and and none of that happened. And what did happen is that Tom Brady found a team with some pretty good weapons, and he's going to wind up playing there now, and it's going to be. Well, it's the first time in 20 years that he's not going to be the starting quarterback for the New England Patriots. And I think the first thing that I want to know is how you, as a longtime Patriots fan, feel about this situation.
I don't know if I've had the time to process enough to go through the stages.
So you're not weeping yet?
Eternally weeping. I know what it feels like to be a Jets fan now. After I thought I won the offseason when Al was going down to another podcast, and now he's back. It's like Manisha's pulling out the rug from underneath me. It is a bit surreal, the Brady stuff. I can't really wrap my head around it yet. We had gone back and forth, over numerous different episodes about it's a $13.5 million cap hit, and they're going to not want to take that large cap hit, and maybe we were looking at it from the wrong angle. Maybe they can take a $13.5 million cap hit. They got the entire 2019 season. Look at Stidham running the scout team against a pretty damn good defense. And it sounds by all accounts, they made their offer to Brady, and there was never really any follow-up on that from either side. You know, I don't want to get in the business of pointing fingers at anybody right now. I don't believe any one thing that I hear. I think you can take pieces from different things that we've been that we've read and that we've heard on the radio and the television men speaking. I think there's kernels of truth in everything, and there's agendas coming from each angle. It's just odd. It's weird. It's today's been a weird day. I remembered where I was when Larry Bird retired. Wow. This is a little different.
Well, it's been weird for a lot of reasons. We're dealing with
right. I don't want to get into that. This is we're not medical professionals. We're not even podcast professionals.
Yeah, but I think we can comment on the fact that we're living in a very strange world right now. So I don't think either of us, I don't think anybody listening to this has been through the situation we're currently dealing with this coronavirus. And, you know, everybody's at this point, the issue of whether we're even going to have a football season is certainly
fair. It's fair.
Not set in stone. But, you know, it's a lot going on. It has felt like... My brother texted me that there were deer running around in where he lives. He lives in a city, and there were deer running around. Like he said, I Am Legend, which is a movie where everybody got sick, and then there was like one guy who was fine. The deer were running around New York City as if they owned the place. But the moral of the story is that deers are jerks, and you know, don't put up with that. Just because we're all sick and we all have to stay inside doesn't mean we have to let the deers take over, right?
Sure.
Now, I'm going to bring this back. Trust me, this is all a metaphor for Tom Brady. So, do we have to get into this business of finger pointing? Is this something that matters at the end of the day? If Bill Belichick is wrong and let Tom Brady get away a year too early... Let's say that we correctly blame him for it. What difference does it make?
It doesn't. It, at the end of the day, it doesn't make any difference at all. I think that, and again, looking at this from the wrong, at least speaking for myself, from the wrong perspective, he's done this to Hall of Famers. Vince Wilfork finished with Houston. Randy Moss went to the Vikings and then to the Titans, then to the 49ers. It happens time and again. You know, there are the other cases, the Teddy Bruschis,
right,
Kevin Fox, the Troy Browns, that kind of thing. But, you know, 20 years is a long time. You know, as you tweeted earlier today, it was a privilege to cover him. And I kind of come from the same point of view. It's kind of absurd the level of success that Patriots fans have witnessed in person over the last 20 years. Matt Chatham wrote a story about the word is grateful. And I continue to be flabbergasted by the amount of idiots in Boston media, just abject morons who've had a front row seat for the better part of two decades and still don't realize the kind of overarching program that they use in terms of letting somebody go 1 year earlier rather than later, most often.
Right. And there's been a lot of focus on the idea of, okay, so Stephon Diggs got away, and DeAndre Hopkins got traded. And I think that they could have, in theory, done the Diggs deal. I honestly don't know about Hopkins because David Johnson, it's really tough to know how much value the Titans. So the Titans received in exchange for DeAndre Hopkins, who
Texans.
I think is
Texans.
Who did I say?
Titans.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. But Houston.
Well, actually, Houston.
Texans. Well, actually, Houston. The Houston Texans received David Johnson, who is the best running back in football 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, a really productive. He can run it, can catch it. And so Arizona sent Johnson and a second-round pick to the Texans for DeAndre Hopkins and, I think, a late-round pick. And I look at that trade and I go, could the Patriots have done this? Maybe they could have sent their 23rd and like a third rounder. But is that, but then how do the, so how then do the Texans think that David Johnson's worth more than that? I honestly don't know. And he's got a big salary too. It's a very weird trade. And then you look at it and you go, well, Bill O'Brien, you know, he's an offensive minded coach. Maybe he really wanted David Johnson. But anyway, I think, you know, you look at all this stuff about weapons, and here's what it comes down to for me. The Patriots would rather pay a good player, or I'm sorry, would rather pay three good players, guys who are above average, than give all that money to one player. I think that to me has been their the way that they've run for two decades now. And, you know, if right now, if that's what, and we're just guessing, we haven't heard directly from Tom Brady why he left. I would imagine that the answer to this comes in a book 2 or 3 years down the road, maybe after he's done playing. And we'll wait and we'll see. But what it comes back to for me is this. If, let's say this is totally Bill's fault. Let's say he just completely mismanaged it, that he and Kraft should not have allowed Brady to, they shouldn't have renegotiated to give up the franchise tag. But Bill should have gotten into it earlier. He should have made signing Brady a bigger priority. And you know, the CBA, the new CBA negotiations played a big, big part in this. That negotiation closed like 3 days ago when they approved the CBA and gave the Patriots more flexibility to make a decent offer to Brady. There's this sort of back and forth about the Patriots saying, well, we never heard from Tom what he really wanted. But let's say this is Bill Belichick's fault. Who in football would you rather have get you out of this situation?
Well, the answer is obvious here, and it's Ben Volen, that mittens losing asshole Volen today, actually tweeted, and I have to even question to wonder if he believes this. Ben Volen tweeted this morning, and the two absurdities in this tweet, I mean, this might be the most moronic thing ever uttered. I award him no points for this. Quote, Patriots only got two more seasons out of Brady after trading away Garoppolo. They got a Super Bowl out of it, but now have no real plan at quarterback. They only got a Super Bowl.
Only one Super Bowl.
They only won one Super Bowl. They won two AFC championships, made the playoffs all 3 years. They were double-digit wins all 3 years.
Can I ask you a question?
Shoot.
How many Super Bowls have the Cleveland Browns won?
I believe that would be a big fat goose egg, which is very, very close to Volen's IQ.
How about the Detroit Lions?
Zero.
Okay. How about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
One.
How about one in their whole existence, and that's how many the Patriots have won in the last two seasons, right?
It's winning Super Bowls is not easy.
It's not?
Allegedly. I mean, I'm honestly offended by, listen, big surprise, I'm shocked and offended and hurt by something that a media says. It just, What's going on in Boston media, the reaction to this, they're so spoiled and so jaded by what's in front of them. And I can't wait. This sentiment has been expressed on Twitter over the last, 12 hours, going back to recording this podcast on Tuesday night. They don't realize that their owner, if they think Brady, and they're going to go on and on about this, that Brady being the linchpin for the success on this. Okay. Your relevance, gone. Your financial prosperity, being in demand for the Teddy 20s and the appearances on Comcast Sports Tonight and NBC Sports Boston and whatever flavor of the month Nesson shit show is on weekday nights, gone. Gone. Your relevance is gone. And they're being exposed. Epstein, this is why part of the reason why this podcast exists, to call out the idiocy and the trolling nature of what's going on here. 20 years, it's over, and they still don't know what they've seen. Ben Volen thinks Bill Belichick has no plan. Let that sink in for a second.
Right. Well,
this is a man who doesn't plan for his infrequent trips to go to Gillette to do his job. He's been self-quarantining before it was fashionable.
Well, okay. Okay, well... I'm trying to decide which one of these cars to jump on. I'm watching a train go by, and they're really all very inviting. But I think, first of all, of course they have a plan. Now that plan, it would seem, revolves around either Jarrett Stidham or whichever veterans are available on the market. And, you know, if you look at the salary cap situation, it doesn't seem like they'd be getting much value out of one of the veterans who's available. it doesn't really add up, because when you take Brady's dead money, already holding $13.5 million there, you know, do they want to go pay $20 million to a guy like Andy Dalton? Well, I think he's at 17 now. So what, are they going to go trade a draft pick for him and take on that salary? You know, it doesn't really seem as inviting as the idea of continuing to pay Jarrett Stidham. I think he makes like, what, $1 or $2 million?
Yeah, he's low seven figures, I believe. Yeah, and that's the answer. When you're carrying a $13.5 million cap hit, you go with the cheaper option. You have Cody Kessler, who is also another small salary cap hit there, and you bring in the proverbial cheap veteran who falls through the cracks. I mean, the quarterback carousel is almost pretty full at this point, considering Rivers has gone to Indianapolis, Bridgewater's gone to Carolina, Brady's going to Tampa. So there's just not a lot of room. The Chargers have a need to fill. The Bengals have an excess asset, presumably, if they're taking Burrow. So there's going to be somebody who falls through the cracks, be it Dalton after being released, somebody like, God help me, Jameis Winston. But they'll bring in, I would imagine they'll bring in another body.
So, okay. So I think that...
But there's no plan.
Yeah, I think, and I do think there's a plan, but I think that, okay, so perhaps for the first time, so I started covering the Patriots in 2006, and I can't remember a time when I've covered them where fans, okay, so Brady got hurt in 2008, and Matt Castle really hadn't started the game since high school, and I could see where fans would be a little nervous then, but they knew enough about Castle. He'd been around a little bit, and, you know, he won 11 games. Well, you know, 10. He won 10 of the games he started, 10 of the 15 games that he started. But this might be the first time when Patriots fans have some right to be a little bit staring at this thing going, we don't know what's going to happen. We just don't know anything about Jarrett Stidham. The last time we really saw him, he was out there throwing a pick six during the season. But that's all we've seen of Jarrett Stidham. But the Patriots see him every day in practice, and they know if he's ready.
Agreed.
And I think people have this idea. Like, in my mind, the concept of a franchise quarterback is a little overhyped. Yes, the NFL has become more of a passing-oriented league. That's unquestionable. But there's more than one way to win a football game. Having the best quarterback is certainly probably the most bankable path to getting there. It's one of the reasons that the Patriots have been 9 times and won 6. But the first time that they won, Tom Brady was not the same guy who threw for 505 yards in Super Bowl 52.
Were the two words that were uttered about Super Bowl 36 Brady?
What were the two words?
Game manager.
Yes. But he evolved, he grew, and he became a quarterback who got them back there five more wins. And that said, Bill Belichick has already shown that he can win a Super Bowl with a guy playing somewhat above average. He showed that he could win 10 games. You know, got that team to 11 wins basically with Matt Castle in 2008. If that happened this year, they would absolutely make the playoffs, because now we're going to have an extra playoff slot. And they were, I think, one of only two 11-win teams that ever didn't make the playoffs, the only one under that format that didn't.
Yeah, and we're also overlooking that the fact that they won Super Bowl 53 with a noodle-armed, cliff-diving quarterback with a broken-down tight end and no weapons.
Right, and you know... That offense actually did play really well in the first two rounds of the playoffs. People, you know,
41 and 37 points in rounds 1 and 2.
They're on all cylinders in those two games. And Brady was, listen, we can go through a million moments that guy had. What he did in the overtime of the AFC Championship in 2018 is just by itself legendary. And I'm not going to sit here and try to discount the plays that he made and how important he was. And if Jarrett Stidham's the quarterback that year, do they win the Super Bowl? I don't know. That's really tough to say that they would have. You know, if second year Jarrett Stidham was quarterback, do they win Super Bowl 53? I don't know. But
That was a really good foot. That the idiots that trigger me about the Sony Michel, the power running game they had that year, the way they morphed it, the defense was solid and tough the whole way. Again, just people not realizing what they're seeing right in front of them. Were you going to believe me or your lion eyes? I mean, it continues to just trigger me.
Well, that team, that 2018, had four absolutely terrible performances. Three games where they were just completely taken apart. All on the road against Jacksonville, Detroit, and Tennessee. They also had a game against the Steelers where it was close and it came down to, you know, a series right at the end where they were in the red zone and couldn't score. And then the Miami Miracle where, you know, they kind of dominated Miami in some ways, but then just could not put the ball in the end zone, and then they couldn't finish them off, and then Miami got that miracle play. So I always felt like that 2018 was better than their record showed and better than their worst performances indicated. So, and then they got super healthy by the postseason.
Shades of the 2006 Colts on defense a little bit.
But they absolutely needed that top-level quarterback play. That team needed that. They needed it in 2014. They needed it in 2016. But you know what? They didn't need it in 2001. They needed good quarterback play. They needed a guy who could go out there and make the plays that were there.
Had good quarterback play for 5 years prior to that. And it was jarring to the eyes when somebody came on the field who took care of the football and made good decisions. Just what a difference it made.
And didn't fall apart at the end. Didn't take it too seriously. And which, when I say too seriously, I mean, that team won because they had the Tom Brady who was like, oh, this is just another bowl game. Like, I've been through this and he didn't understand the magnitude. And he said this, they didn't understand the magnitude of what he was dealing with. And that was the right guy for that moment. Eli Manning has won two Super Bowls. He's not as good as Tom Brady. Not even close. Not as good as his brother. Not as good as a lot of quarterbacks. In many years, he was just slightly better than average. In 2007, I personally had written him off. I was like, the Giants blew it. This guy he's not as good as Philip Rivers or Ben Roethlisberger. And that's still, I mean, certainly not as good as Roethlisberger. It's debatable as to whether he had a better career than Rivers. And that debate, when I say it's debatable, it's probably just debatable on the fact that he performed really well in two postseasons. You know, but Eli Manning was the right guy for his team at those times. And 2015, Peyton Manning was awful. He was terrible in the postseason, but he had one of the greatest defenses you're ever going to see. And that's just the point here in this is that you can build a team in a number of ways. And Bill Belichick is going to get the most out of this roster that he can. If they can get into 2020 with a quarterback who, you know, only costs about $1 million and maybe go draft a young backup to compete, you know, I think that they will find ways to maximize the rest of their spending.
There's no doubt that that's what they do. They maximize their available assets and capital.
So it's still so now the 2020 Patriots have probably already been judged as a disaster with no plan. It is day two, basically, free agency.
And no contracts have been inked yet. Nothing.
No, not officially. And the
declarative statements that have already been uttered by, and God help us, there's more time for this idiocy with all the airtime there is to fill on sports radio and, you know, the screaming heads on TV. It's going to get to the point. And I'm increasingly getting to this point. We got a DM to the Entitled Town account where what was said was that basically we're that outlet, this person's outlet for their Patriots news, because there is just so much, everything out there, it was compared to commercials. Like when you're watching TV and it goes to commercial's just white noise in the background. You're scrolling through your phone or you're talking to somebody, whatever it is, and it's become that bad. It's easy to tune out the idiocy.
So, I'm sure you've seen this. Justin Sales, who is a writer for The Ringer. Well, he's an editor for The Ringer, but he's from New England, and he wanted to do a story about this Brady situation and the possibility of Brady leaving. And he interviewed me for it, mentioned the podcast in there, which was nice.
You are the host of the Entitled Town podcast, after all.
Did he say the host?
Yes.
That's what I told him to say.
Sick humble brag, Brown.
I said, I told him to introduce me as Al's sidekick. But anyway.
You're not wrong.
So we talked for like an hour about this whole situation, a lot of stuff. And the first thought I have is every writer should have to be interviewed for a print piece, because it is very interesting to see how things you say are presented when they are part of a much bigger conversation. Because there are quotes in there that I look at and I go, yes, I absolutely said that. And I don't think anything I've said here has been misrepresented, but it would be really interesting to tie it back to a couple of other points that I made in the liner.
You're claiming you were quoted out of context.
No. Well, not necessarily out of context. You know, these were points I made that were part of a story that I was telling to Justin. And Justin was taking them and applying them to a story that he was trying to tell to his readers. And so,
to fit his narrative.
In a sense, right. Yes. Right. And I don't think I was misrepresented in any way, but I do think that there were, I wish that that conversation had been part of this podcast where people could hear some of the other points that I made. Because, you know, one of the first things he said to me, which is now hilarious, he said to me, let's say Tom Brady winds up in the most ridiculous place possible. Let's say he winds up in Tampa. Okay. And I said, you've been out of town for a little bit. You're living somewhere in another part of the country. That's not the most ridiculous place I've heard. The most ridiculous place I've heard is New York for either of the New York teams. And thankfully, I do not have to eat my hat, because as I told Christian Arkin, that was a ridiculous concept. And, you know, I said to him, why are you even talking about this on the radio like it's a real possibility? It's not. If it happens, I'll eat my hat. Well, it didn't happen, of course. But Justin didn't even realize how crazy things are here, how the speculation had driven such ridiculous thinking. And one of the things I put to Justin was the idea. I said, here's what's going to happen. How are fans going to react to this? I said, there is a huge swath of fans who don't know how they're going to react to this, because the radio show from 2 to 6 has not told them yet. And the radio station probably began telling them today. And I'm sure they started blaming the Patriots because, and this was my premise in the story, and this did not really fit. Justin wasn't writing about how the Boston media influences opinion. But this was the point I was making to Justin, is that they're going to blame the Patriots, not necessarily because the Patriots did something wrong here. They're going to blame the Patriots because Tom Brady is out of town. If he goes and plays well, the Patriots are here. And the Patriots get to be the target of all of that scorn every day. Because they're here. That organization is still going. If Tom Brady is playing well, they have a narrative that they can pick on for months and maybe years. Let's not forget Malcolm Butler. We're still talking about that in 2020. And even after we got an answer from Malcolm himself as to why he wasn't playing in the Super Bowl, we had Alex Barth come on this show and talk about it as if it was some kind of conspiracy. Because that's how twisted around we are. And so that 2 to 6 show, or the 2 to 6 shows, it does them nothing to blame Tom Brady. Okay? There's nothing useful in that for them. They can't mine that for material every day because of the physical distance of Brady playing in Tampa. But the Patriots are here. And when we do that daily referendum on whether the Patriots can win the Super Bowl, they can hammer home to their audience every day that no, the Patriots can't win the Super Bowl because Bill, arrogant Bill, screwed up. Didn't take Tom Brady seriously.
He went from a noodle-armed cliff diver between 2 to 6 and on the Bonesy and Despicable Arcan show on 98.5, the Sports Hub, to they now can just pivot, as you're saying, Kraft's cheap, Belichick's arrogant, you know, next call.
Yep. That's you nailed it.
And the print coverage isn't much better.
Right. And I think, well, I think that a lot of the print opinion, we've talked about this before, sort of this like social contract, that there's just this unspoken agreement, and it's not, it's more of a coerced sort of, or more of a silent coercion, that once something takes hold, no one's really going to kind of speak against it because it doesn't do that much good. And that, okay, you know, that doesn't, there are people in this market, a handful, who push back against the nonsense.
Not enough.
But not enough, and not at the big places, and not in the mainstream as much.
And it becomes, they're all catering to the lowest common denominator, and the lowest common denominator now has the loudest voice. There's nothing out there. You know, Mike Reese and a few others aside, there's nothing out there that is coming from a place of being genuine. It's manufactured to create the largest audience, which tends to be the loudest and the dumbest. Just walking through social media this morning after the Brady Instagram announcement got
penned out. Dumpster fire.
Oh my God. Absolutely. And I quote tweeted one of them, and I couldn't do much more just because things are crazy for everybody. But you have people saying that Bill Belichick should be fired for this. I mean, really? And then claiming that.
And then we get into this stupid conversation that one of them was more important than the other. And
which is, again, is just a make it a simple argument because there is no nuance and there's no truth to either side. It was the perfect football marriage for 2 decades. And now you have to point fingers and assess blame. I have my own opinions on that regarding just kind of the spinelessness and wishy-washiness of Patriot ownership and all this, but that's another subject for another time.
You know what, though? See, here's what I think. I think that, you know, I recently was talking to somebody who has a union job, good job, and they're looking around and they're like, you know, there's only so much room for me to move up. There's only so many ways for me to improve my situation. Like, it's, you know, if this person goes, maybe I'll have a shot, but they're looking at it that way, right? And I'm looking at it like, well, if you were 25 and somebody offered you this job, you'd be thrilled. You'd be like psyched, but you're, you know, late 30s now. And you're looking at like, okay, I've got a long road ahead of me. How am I going to accomplish the things I want to accomplish? And I think you get to a point when you're Tom Brady where you look around and you say, you know, there might be some other ways that I could be treated, that maybe I want a place where I'm not treated like one of the other 52 players on the roster. And that's not necessarily wrong. That's not necessarily bad.
Mental fatigue is a real thing. Absolutely.
It sure is. Yeah. And it's hard to put the passion that he puts in year round to get ready to do what he does.
In the situation, the comparison I'm going to make isn't perfectly analogous because there was injury concerns involved. And there was a clear successor plan in place, thanks ironically to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Joe Montana was hurt a lot in the late 80s and early 90s. We've talked about the 1990 NFC Championship game a few times on here. He was never really the same after getting hit by Leonard Marshall and Jim Bird, I believe, late
Spartelli
in that game.
Spartelli bingo.
Right, yeah, there we go. And they had Steve Young. And quite, if you dig into it a little bit deeper, there have been documentaries made about this. Joe Montana, or should I say Bill Walsh, fostered a really, really, really environment of criticism and competition between Young and Montana, trying to have them push each other to get the best out of them. There was a lot of wishy-washiness with Walsh out of the end there. And by the time he was ready to go, he was done with Bill Walsh. Walsh was done with him. And they moved on and they traded him. Steve Young was obviously very good. And mental fatigue is a real thing. It probably happened to Favre in Green Bay. Countless other situations as well. It's real. People go through it. You know, workaday stiffs like you and I have gone through it professionally. You can only imagine what it would be in a high-profile position like that.
We saw it with McCarthy and Rodgers in Green Bay. It's just that, yeah, and I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong. I don't think that there has to be something dysfunctional going on for Tom Brady to want to just go and play somewhere else. I don't think that's necessarily the case. And, you know, maybe he sees it as, hey, I want a team that's kind of run my way. Maybe I want to go play with, Godwin and Evans and O.J. Howard. And I don't know if Cameron Brady is back for them. But you know, all of those things might factor into it. Now, maybe Bill Belichick did something terrible. Maybe Tom Brady's doing something terrible. I don't know. We really don't know. We're just guessing. The point is that right now we have a media that is also guessing all the time. They're not telling you that they're guessing. They've decided that Tom Brady left because Bill is arrogant and, you know, he didn't go get Stephon Diggs. This rumor came up in October that somebody, this guy, like Mo Chanel, is that what he called himself? Totally fake account, pretended to be like a former ESPN employee who came up with this rumor that, hey, the Patriots are trying to trade for Diggs. They're all very close to a trade for Diggs. And I feel like ever since then, people have decided that the only way Tom Brady was going to stay in New England was if they had Stephon Diggs. Because
who is a perfect, I heard of him, candidate.
Perfect candidate. And
caught
and
the because, Minneapolis hey, miracle. He chirps, he flies off the handle a lot. He's infamous as much as he is famous.
Because the other assumption, and we don't know if this is true. We don't know if Brady was really upset that Antonio Brown got cut. Maybe he understood that. Maybe he didn't. I don't understand how the Patriots were supposed to keep Antonio Brown after what happened here.
There's no way on earth. We probably may have killed them if they had. But there's really very little difference, Dave. The media was flinging shit, mindlessly speculating, and in some cases outright fabricating stuff over the course of the last year regarding where Brady's destination was and what his mindset was regarding Belichick and the team. He said himself as much to Charlie Weiss, as we talked about last week, why would they stop doing it now? It's getting clicks. It's getting attention. I believe nothing on the surface unless even if I hear it from them, I may not believe it because it could be presented out of context.
And here's the shame of it, really. And we're part of it because we're talking about how this is being evaluated. But the shame of it is that we're not
talking about. The absurdity of it is what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's true. But unfortunately, we and the other shows, you know, they're not really celebrating an absolutely just it was a gift of a career. Like what the people in this region got out of Tom Brady, I feel super lucky that I got to watch him play. I feel I am incredibly lucky that I got to see that 2006 comeback in the divisional playoffs against the Chargers. This is one of the most incredible things I've ever seen. The next game against the Colts in Indianapolis, unbelievable, one of the best games I've ever seen. The 2007 season, when Brady, for the first time in his career, had that top-end talent and threw for 50 touchdowns with Randy Moss, that is one of the most I can't wrap my head around how great they were and how every single time they got the ball, every series was just like you're waiting for something incredible to happen, and they kept delivering time after time.
They're a goddamn pinball machine.
And then Brady got hurt in 08. I took a break from being a journalist for a while. I went and became a lawyer because people didn't hate me enough. And I come back, and I remember when I was thinking about coming back, I had watched Super Bowl 49 with the comeback against Seattle, and I'd watched that with my wife, and I just remember feeling like this is what I used to see all the time. This is the thing that should never have happened, and it happened. And I remember thinking, I would love to get back into this because There's only going to be so much more Tom Brady and so much more Patriots. And I'd like to see where it goes. And lucky me, I got to go to 3 Super Bowls in a row. And I got to see the first overtime Super Bowl. Tom Brady gave me that all my life. Every time I sit down in front of every year, I'd sit down in front of the TV and go, I hope this one goes to overtime. And then I got to one, and Tom Brady took them to overtime. And the throw that he made, that fourth down throw in the fourth quarter, I believe it was to Hogan, is just a sick play. Just watch that throw. You'll never understand how he made it. You know,
you're talking about the 3rd and 10 from the shadow of their own goalposts.
Yes, I think that's what I'm talking about.
That comeback pattern on the right side. Yeah, there was a throw to Amendola at the 2-minute warning, where I was a puddle by that point. That football game
was insane.
Defies description.
They were down by 25. You all know what happened. This is what we should be talking about right now. That's what Tom Brady gave you. He gave you a comeback from 28-3. It's been said, but it can't be said enough. And
I remember sitting in an office in February of 2005, you know, with some friends after they had beaten the Eagles in Jacksonville. And I remember saying to a very good friend of mine, I said, you know what? These are the golden days and we'll never see this again. And we did. Over. And over, and over. And you're not going to win the championship every year, but no. God damn. I mean, like you said, 07, you know, whatever. There was so many, and I hope in time that, you know, we've talked about what should we do for, you know, to fill time in the off season when we don't have a lot to talk about. Well, there hasn't been any dearth of anything to talk about at this point. One of my ideas is to go back and pick a game and kind of walk through it a little bit. California Bill rewatchable style, but that's probably been done to death and it's going to be done to death over the next 6 months. But
did you say
it's just ridiculously blessed would be the two words that I would apply to how I have felt and how I hope I'll feel when this is all over.
Did you say there's been no dearth of things to talk about?
There hasn't been a dearth of things to talk about. Roll back the tape around. I'll huddle up again and run it again. Jesus.
Darth?
D-E-A-R-T-H.
All right, if you're good with that.
Okay. Getting pedantic again. Let's move on.
I believe the word we're looking for is dearth.
Darth. Okay, dearth, Darth.
Darth Vader over here.
Let me get my mittens. And
you're gonna bring.
I feel balance. Like Ryan Hannibal just did the audio version of Ryan Hannibal.
Yeah, you did. You're going to bring balance to the word of day calendar. Okay. So, all right. I have a dearth of focus right now, but
what else?
Anyway. But yeah, I mean, you know, I can't even find the words to do justice to what I witnessed in that game. What he did in Super Bowl 52 was just, that was a monstrous achievement. They lost the game. He threw for 505 yards. And, you know, we've talked about the 2018 AFC Championship earlier in this show. We've talked about the show. That's another game that comes up on the show all the time. Completely just incredible. Gutting it out, grinding it out, doing what it took to get it done. And then that throw to Gronk in the Super Bowl in 53 that sealed it. Like, that, I mean, in a way you expect it. But every time it happens, you're just still somehow in awe. And these are things that should not happen as frequently as they do. He's truly just he's the football player of his generation. He's number one. And you know, and the fact that there's such a strong, hateful opposition to that is evidence enough to me that it's true, because people weep, they cry. They saw because Tom Brady is going out there and winning all these Super Bowls that they feel like their team should win. Now, as a Giants fan, we took 2 from the Patriots, and everybody else can cry about it because we know that it's possible. It can be done if you just play better. All the other teams, they didn't play better, except one time the Eagles did. And you didn't win Super Bowls. That's what happens. So cry about it. But yeah, I'm glad we got a second to talk about, you know, how great that career has been here. And I don't think of this as a zero-sum game. I don't think that just because Tom Brady goes and plays somewhere else that he can't be successful and that Bill Belichick can't be successful. In theory, they could meet up in a Super Bowl someday. So how about that?
And the internet would explode.
Let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
My Giants, we have Daniel Jones. We have the fourth overall pick this year. And just signed get put the franchise tag on Leonard Williams. Just signed the cornerback from the Panthers, Bradbury, and still have some chips to spend, a bunch of cap space. And so what do you think? Who's got better futures right now? Better record in 2020, Patriots or Giants?
Patriots.
We don't usually do predictions on the show, but I think it's an interesting question. You're going with Patriots. Why?
It isn't. It's infrastructure first and foremost. There's a lot that's unknown going on with the Giants. They have a first year head coach in Joe Judge. Gettleman's team building philosophy has been, let's be kind and say it's been questioned. And there just hasn't been a lot of success there. It is the new NFL. They have cap space. The league is designed for teams to spike, to rise quickly and fall even more quickly. So, I mean, who knows? Listen, I'm a honk. I'm a Bobo. I believe in the infrastructure and the program that they have here. McDaniels is still there. Belichick is still there. Despite what we've been told for a year, Nick Caserio is still there.
Yeah, and, you know,
it's not going to look the same. It's probably not going to look the same stylistically. A lot of changing faces on defense. They're going to be moving from a couple of older players with Van Noy, and Chase Winovich is probably going to have to play a bigger part this year with Collins being gone as well. So they're on to the next generation, a lot like they did when they.
It just feels different. Feels different, caller. Just feels different. No Tom Brady to bail you out.
It's felt different for 20 years. This is just the latest. This is just the latest moving goalposts in 2 decades of moving goalposts.
It is going to be, I think it's going to be in a lot of ways, one of the most interesting seasons. I'm kind of looking forward to see what happens.
Interesting.
Interesting. Hashtag interesting. I mean, the Dolphins have not really improved their quarterback situation, but they've improved a lot of other ways, and they were well coached down the stretch. They beat the Patriots in that at the end of the regular season.
They improved over the course of the season. That's usually always a sign of good coaching.
People take the AFC East for granted, which is criminal. That whole division has been, the numbers show it. The numbers show that division has suffered for having the Patriots in it. People believe that the Patriots have benefited from the lack of quality in that division. It's the exact opposite. Those teams have, for years, been you go around, you just give one or two extra wins to some of those teams, and they're playoff teams.
Did the Niners of the 80s go through that because the NFC West was, you know, largely garbage?
The Rams were okay in the late 80s.
Yeah, they were up in Jim Everett, you know, okay. They had a couple. They went to the NFC title game with a quarterback named Dieter Brock in 1985.
I don't remember.
Did the Buffalo Bills get a free pass for going the 4 straight Super Bowls and the AFC was way, way, way down and the rest of the AFC East was garbage? No. Did the Celtics get a free pass in the 80s for the Atlantic Division being garbage? Well, that wasn't the case because the Sixers were good. But the Lakers, the Western Conference, just complete shit in the 80s? No, there's fan fiction's been spouted ever since Magic Johnson and Pat Riley left L.A., and it continues to this day. Their greatness, the Celtics' greatness,
Niners'
greatness, the Lakers' greatness, is as much as I want to vomit in my mouth saying that, I mean, it stood the test of time, and it's, again, we probably should have known what we were seeing in the moment.
When you look at, and I call it weak division theory, and maybe someday we'll talk about it a little bit more. Well, I'll get all the numbers out and we'll go through it. But when you look at the second, third, and fourth place teams in every division, since 2000, it's either two or three, because it was after realignment. I think it was 2002. I think they realigned after Brady's first year as a starter. So you look at it since 2002, when every division had four teams. You take away the top team, and now you're looking at the second, third, and fourth best team in every division. You're essentially weighing the strength of the opponents that you had to overcome to win that division. And the AFC East is like second, has I think is the best or the second best record, depending on how things shook out last year, of any division in football. It's been the toughest division to win. And
the Jets of 09 and 10 have been deified in New York City for just making it to two straight AFC title games. The Patriots went to eight straight AFC title games.
And people call it six free wins, and they've done it exactly two times in 20 years.
Facts be damned.
So, you know, but it's a new era for the NFL. We're trimming down one of the bye weeks to the playoffs. We're looking at a potential 17th game in 2021. A lot has changed, and the new era of the NFL kind of starts now, and that's going to be with Tom Brady somewhere else. And we'll see what happens. And you know what? I mean, I think if you want to blame Bill Belichick for losing Tom Brady and letting the 2020 season get away from him, I think one thing you ought to do is wait until the 2020 season has been played. I think that's my minimum requirement. That's what we call standing. If you want
to
bring
fuel a case, the takes machine ain't gonna fuel the radio, man.
If you want to bring a case in court, you can't go and say, well, my neighbor is thinking about encroaching on my land. You can't say, well, you know, they're thinking about hitting my car with their car. Nope. It's got to happen. You have to suffer the injury. So, Patriots fans, let's take a deep breath. And I know there's some emotion. There's a little emotional distress here. There might be some negligent infliction of emotional distress, you could claim, from Belichick being so mean to you and letting Tom Brady get away. And I bet you're weeping about it. Sure, I get it. It's emotional. But let's see what happens. You know, there's a saying around here. I don't know if you've heard this. But people say this sometimes. They say, in Bill we trust. And that Bill that they're talking about is not Bill Walton. It is Bill Belichick, the head coach and general manager who has won six Super Bowls with this franchise. That is as many as any other franchise has won total. Okay? The Pittsburgh Steelers did it. It took three coaches to get them six rings. Bill did that all by himself here. Okay? And when I say all by himself, I just mean he won all six as the head coach, okay? Tom Brady contributed. Everybody contributed. Teddy Bruschi contributed. You know, Matt Slater contributed. Friend of the pod, Matt Chatham contributed, okay? But let's hold on a second, and let's see where this is all going. Let's not flush 2020 down the toilet just yet. Maybe they'll surprise you. They've done it before. Many times, the idea that the New England Patriots are capable of surprising anyone is absolutely stunning. And it took a lot of work by some really disgruntled people, some people who are in the business of turning joy into frustration. It took a lot of work from those people to make this happen.
Okay. And I would say for those who are attempting to churn joy into frustration in the hopes they'll equal clicks and ears and eyeballs,
yeah,
turn off your radios.
Well, you know, it's like okay, cable news. There are a number of options in cable news that you can go look at. And I would say avoid all of them, especially when the shows have a political bending one way or the other way. Doesn't matter. And here's why. Imagine your program is based on the premise that you support a particular political party and you think that everything that party does is the greatest and everything the other party does is terrible. And then one day, the other party does something great. You can't go on your show and tell your audience that it's great because that's not what your program is. You're locked into an opinion against it. These shows on the radio in the afternoon in Boston. We're on radio all day in Boston. They make a product, and their audience is counting on them to deliver a product of negative opinions about the New England Patriots every day. And if they come on and they say, with the exception of winning a Super Bowl, like the agreed upon rule is you can credit them for winning a Super Bowl. You can also on that same day devalue that Super Bowl. You could say, well, the league kind of stunk this year, but for what, that's it. That's the only credit you're allowed. And by the way, you can also start saying how they're not going to win it next year. Okay. That's the product.
There is no way they can repeat caller, and you are a footy pajama wearing bobo if you think they can.
And there's probably a lot of psychological and sociological research that explains why. I've been reading up on what's it called? This is killing me. Oh, terror management theory. Terror management theory is sort of this idea that because people know that they're going to die at some point, and because they know that they're mortal, that the fear of their death, if you can raise the fear in their death, you can get them to agree to some irrational things. Okay? And I've been reading up on this because I find it really interesting in the context of the Patriots, where they have this dynasty that they have made New Englanders to some degree feel like winners. And the radio show puts forth this premise that Bill Belichick is coming between you and your way of life. Okay? You feel like a winner on Sundays. But when they lose, it's because he took that from you. They basically act like he's a terrorist. Okay?
Arrogant terrorist.
He's an arrogant terrorist. You know, and when I say he's like a terrorist, I just mean in the sense of a threat to your way of life. That's how they portray him. Oh, yeah, they say. Hey, I would never fire him. He's the best. But he's messing with your way of life. He's going to end this dynasty. He's arrogant. And then what's going to happen? All the Kansas City fans are going to feel superior to you. You're going to feel inferior. That's the message that they need to pound home to you every day. Because you need to rush to your radio at 2 o'clock when you get in the car, turn it on, and hope that things have returned to normal, that Bill Belichick has come to his senses and he's not going to destroy your way of life. But no, they tell you. No, it's gotten worse.
I'm not sure I agree. I think our old, we're more aligned than not, but I think it's just, and I don't want to get into the political side of thing here, but just creating a cult of personality in a team. Yes. That you want to be a part of Team 98.5 and Team Felcher and Team Bonesy and Arcand. It's just a cult of personnel. That's all it is.
And it's not what politics. What I'm talking about is, I don't even think that they're, I don't think.
No one's afraid of Adam Jones. He's putting no terror into anybody.
I don't think that they're.
Except for nutritionists, perhaps.
I don't think they're applying terror management theory in the sense that they know what it is. Okay. But I think that there is some truth to that idea that when your way of life is threatened, and then there's somebody telling you it's so easy to fix. It's so easy. Just go get Stephon Diggs. And
you got to get a guy in the room and bring some weapons in here.
You want to keep, you want to keep your way of life? You want to keep winning? Let's get a kicker in here to compete with Gostkowski. Right? Or he's going to blow one of those extra points like he did in Denver 100 years ago. You know? Never mind that he's one of the most accurate ever. Every time I'd go on Twitter and I'd say, Gostkowski is one of the most accurate kickers ever. People would like immediately be like, well, he blew this extra point a week ago. He blew this kick then. He blew it in Denver. And it's like everything is funneled through just the absolute worst iteration of whoever did what. And everybody's completely lost sight of what is great in this franchise. And, you know, their ability to get the most out of the least is why the Patriots have been so successful. Let them continue to try to do that. Actually trust Bill. He gave you 6 Super Bowls. Actually trust him.
The same people that were telling us that Kyle Van Noy was trash. I can't remember the exact word that the words that Felger Maz and that execrable asshole Jim Murray used to decide.
That was more personal, wasn't it?
It got very personal. But the same personal, not personable. They are not personable. at all. But the same people who were telling us that Van Noy was a journeyman trash are now telling us that he's not going to be able to be replaced.
Oh, yeah. Well, again, your way of life is in jeopardy again. It's going to have to be some guy you haven't heard of yet.
And that hyper-local asshole out in Medway who shit on Jamie Collins for his Patriots career part 1.0 is now saying that he's going to be missed. Come on, child, please.
Right. And I think we should, start wrapping up soon, but I think Evan Lazar, who's been on the show, controversial guest, made a good point today when someone said, well, Collins and Van Noy got away. And then somebody said Bentley and
Winovich.
Was it Winovich? But Bentley Winovich. And Winovich are like garbage or whatever, you know, some terrible thing. That's not a direct quote, but that was the essence of it. And Evan said, yeah, well, that's what they were saying about the guys who left. That's what they were saying about Kyle Van Noy 4 years ago. You've got to wait for the guys you haven't heard of to become these indispensable people you hope never leave. And that's the challenge for you Patriots fans, is you've got to wait for those dudes you've never heard of to do what they're supposed to do. And that's what got you 6 Super Bowls. I would think by now people understand how it works, but they don't. That's one of the reasons I feel like we do this podcast. All right, we've stumbled on an interesting piece of information. Friend of the pod, you know, our best bro, Greg Bedard. We talk about him from time to time. I believe you vouched for him on numerous occasions, and your Twitter feed is like 90% Bedard vouches.
Take the over on that.
What's going on with Boston Sports Journal? They, I believe, have one of the best resources in covering the Patriots, which is Miguel Benzon, who is also known as @PatsCap on Twitter, knows the NFL salary cap inside and out, knows down to the penny how much money the Patriots have, probably as well as anybody outside of Foxborough. From what I understood, he's been writing for them for some time. What do you know about his status over there?
Well, there were some rumblings. There was a BJ BSJ's top flights, my guy, Andrew Dice Clay, he was just asking the question caller. He had noticed in perusing Miguel's Twitter account, and this is I'm casting no aspersions on Miguel at all. Miguel is an invaluable resource, a self-made and valuable resource who saw an inefficiency in the market, the inefficiency being the idiocy and laziness of Boston sports media, and created a niche for himself where he has become the definitive source on everything related to the Patriots salary cap. And this might be the only nice thing I'll ever say remotely about Bedard. Bedard actually showed some out-of-the-box thinking when he brought Miguel on to the Boston Sports Journal to have him as a resource to provide information to his subscribers about the Patriots salary cap situation. Let's put aside for the moment that he always disregarded what Miguel had to say and went with his own asinine and ill-informed theories. But Miguel does not mention the Boston Sports Journal in his Twitter bio anymore. Strangely enough, Bedard still lists him on his website as a contributor. And there's a piece on bjbsjournal.com today written by the aforementioned Andrew Dicekeg. He asked Greg Bedard, he did the journalistically responsible thing and sent Greg an email and asked him about what Miguel, his status was with BSJ. And after responding to 3 tweets from Andrew, and I believe 4 emails, he said that he was too busy to get into it. He could have just said yes or no, but instead he's denying, he's obfuscating. It's absurd. It's ridiculous.
Do you have the Twitter exchange?
Let me pull it up here. Almost a Twitter exchange. Let me pull up my burner here. Stall for time here a little bit, Dave.
So I'm looking at Al's doing a lot better. I'll just tell people were asking about Al this week, and I think he's moved on to softer drugs.
Allegedly. All right. So there were some whispers, and again, this piece is on the BJBS Journal. Today.
Miguel, is, Did you mention that Miguel has taken his name out of the, or has taken Boston Sports Journal out of his profile on Twitter?
I have. You listen to me about as well as Cousin Sal listens to California Bill on that podcast. So thank
Sometimes
you.
Sometimes I'm getting something ready for the next, to get a step ahead. So I apologize.
So Andrew, I'm quoting from Andrew kind of loosely here. He decided to approach BSJ founder, owner, writer, editor, background checker, and recently rehired contributor Greg Bedard about a potentially growing disconnect between Miguel and Greg. He tweeted at Greg, "Is Miguel going to be breaking down the cap implications on the site?" Greg responded, quote, "There's no cap implications. He's gone and will count $13.5 million against the cap. That's it." Andrew responded, "How about the different scenarios of filling the QB position? Miguel laying out what the cap would allow would be good content." Greg responded, "I'm doing that." Andrew asked, a particularly reasonable follow-up, "Is Miguel not with BSJ anymore? He's listed under staff on the site, so I'm curious if subscribers will get his breakdown too." Greg responded, "I'm a little busy at the moment, but feel free to send an email to greg@bostonsportsjournal.com. Greg was a little busy, although he had tweeted along the lines of a dozen times in the last 90 minutes to 2 hours ahead of that. Andrew astutely asks, "Would have been quicker to answer yes or no." He then emailed Greg, as Greg had asked. And Greg responds, "What email address is your membership under? I'm not finding this one."
Because he'll only answer his members. He'll only give his members a straight answer about who, about who's producing content for a website that they might want to subscribe to.
No, he says, I'm not a member currently, but it's but a prospective one. I'd like a clarification before signing up." And Greg responds, "I've seen your timeline. Have a great day."
Oh, revealed. First of all, you've like you're giving up the ghost, buddy. If he worked there, you'd say, yeah, he works here. Like, why wouldn't you say that? And then, like, there's absolutely no reason from the start to be cagey about this. But when you do it that way, you're giving yourself away anyway. Like, this is psychotic behavior. It's like you don't want to admit why. Like, why can't you just own? What? Like, is that a big problem if like, journalists change publications all the time. Sometimes for reasons of cutbacks. Sometimes because they get another job somewhere. They come and go. It's like an itinerant population. There's a lot of turnover.
Would you say that this has become a pattern of behavior with him? He's denying KG. And just dodging and weaving after
yes.
the Loico Gate stuff. He dodged and weaved about his
Las Vegas.
Twitter bio after he had been fired from the Las Vegas Review Journal.
Why was that a
big had it in his Twitter bio until it was called out by BJBS Journal, yours truly.
It would make so much more sense to be honest up front about these things and, you know, own it, give people less of a reason to be kind of fascinated with it and say, hey, I don't work. Two things didn't work out in Las Vegas. I wish them the best. I'm moving on. You see that? You've just cut off half the questions. People aren't obsessed with finding out what the hell's going on because they got a straight answer to some degree. You don't have to frame it in a negative way about yourself, you know? Even if it is a negative situation, you could tell people, look, I'm moving on. I'm going to focus on exclusively on Boston Sports Journal now, and that's the way it's going to be. He eventually got to that, but only after all of this, like, work was done, that makes him look, it just makes you look ridiculous.
Four tweets and three emails without answering the question, then it says he doesn't have enough time.
Yeah. Like he could have just said it in the first response. Why is this? This is what kills me about this guy. What are you managing here? Like, what problem do you think you're containing by hiding the answer that it seems like Miguel has moved on?
That's just the way they do business down there at the Boston Sports Journal.
Yeah. Well, okay. They should have a company meeting and consider a little more transparency from a journalistic institution. Okay. If your job is to report the news, your success is dependent on the public trust. And when you can't tell the public that one of your writers has moved on, it begs questions as to why and how credible are you?
I don't want to get into this one, but when Joe McDonald left his website for the Athletic Boston
that during was
the Bruins postseason run, that was the most, I mean, I burst out laughing when he posted basically assassinating Joe's character in a very passive-aggressive fashion for looking out for what's best for him and his family.
And he was, because it was something along, yeah, it was something along the lines of, well, we wish he had it kind of left us in the middle of hockey season or the middle of playoffs or whatever happened. And you know what? That's not, I understand feeling that way. I get it.
Well, hit pause on that one.
Yeah.
Because Greg left, I believe it was, he left the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for SI in the middle of the Packers season. So do as he says, not as he does.
So was that during the season? Because I think yes. It was during the offseason.
Yes, it was during the season. There was a move, and I'll tweet it out. There was a move during the season. I've written about it.
Maybe it was – oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe it was the Journal Sentinel for the MMQB. It was a move.
No. It must have been the Globe.
Oh, his dream job became available at the Globe, where you could –
because he went from the Globe to Sports Illustrated.
You're right. It was the Journal to the Journal Sentinel. Was it him with
that's
the
where
journals? Journal Sentinel, was, Review so Journal, was, Sports Journal.
Yeah, the Milwaukee.
Journal Sentinel.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And then went to the Globe and then SI. So that's where I got my wires crossed. But you might be right. But okay. But even then, okay, like let's say I understand that it was a predicament. You know what? Be classy about it. Be classy and say, hey, it's too bad this guy's moving on. We would have loved to have him for the rest of the season, but we wish him the best. How about that, right? And when he left Sports Illustrated, he was laid off, and he made it – he took a shot. And in one of those ways where he knocked some other people down to elevate himself – and he pointed out that I think it was Trotter and Banks had been let go from Sports Illustrated before he was. And he said, do the math on that. And he said that in a tweet. And it's like, okay, first of all, those guys were laid off. They had to go find jobs and go through that stuff. Don't celebrate that it happened to them first. This isn't about, okay, you think you're better than them because you stayed on longer. That's not cool. He was also cagey about Chris Price leaving.
These are all facts. The Price thing, you know.
Leaving Boston Sports Journal.
Correct. Chris is with the Globe now.
And didn't he take a shot at Chris at some point?
I won't claim to remember that one, but would it surprise you?
Anyway, that's it. That's your – well, listen, he's a big friend of the podcast. We always wish him the best. And we're just trying to give him some advice to let him know that there's a better way to do this. And I'm not saying there's a better way. Well, there is a better way to be a reporter too. But you know what? I'm not even getting into the professional aspect of stories and all that. All I'm saying is there's just a way to treat your readers, to treat your audience, and to treat the people who work for you with some kind of respect. And
who would want to sign on for that moving forward?
Well, it's a tough business. Let's put it that way.
Fair enough.
So, okay. Do we have any emails?
We do have an email. It's from old friend Pat Nagawam. Pat is chiming in. The subject is, what's the world coming to? And the answer is, I don't know. He doesn't know which one of us said it, but he doesn't know what's worse. Coronavirus coverage 2020 are the experts, in quotation fingers, predicting where Tom Brady will go by which way the wind's blowing. Correct. He's not a fan of the new CBA with the 17 games. He says, so for us to keep up the great work, and with props to Al, let's hope his cocaine use is strictly for medicinal purposes and doesn't become a habit unless he's willing to share with the whole class. Lastly, My jaw hit the floor of my van when Dave said shit on the last episode. I vouch. That's our buddy Pat Nagawam. Pat, thank you. Coronavirus free, Pat Nagawam.
All right. Now,
any reviews?
Interesting developments with reviews. We have gone over 100. We are now at 106 reviews. Since now, I guess most of those people just did what I recommended, which is go in and just hit a button and give us a star review. We still remain at 5.0, a perfect rating after 106 ratings. And we only had one written review since the last show. I'm not going to read it because it is pure gibberish. It is almost as if this person took my instructions quite literally of just mashing buttons.
Joe Haggerty, thank you for writing in. Might be Hannibal too. Lord knows Hannibal never proved
that was poor Joe Haggerty with his
poor Joe Haggerty nothing
with his R2-D2 suit. That's that man wore an R2-D2 suit on television, and he's an adult. Now
allegedly.
The review is 5 stars from somebody called I Don't Know with a capital Y, and it's all gibberish. A gibberish headline and a gibberish word in the text. But we do appreciate you taking the effort and the time to get in there and review it. So I think we've about done a podcast. You know, I just want to say I hope everybody's out there taking this this virus situation seriously. You know, I hear people I hear opinions about people not interested in social distancing, and I get it. It's tough. It sucks. It just sucks. But you've got the potential by staying home of not only keeping yourself from getting sick, but a lot of other people. So keep that in mind, because out of every right, what it's happened with the season, the statistics are that 3 in every 100 people who get this, they die. And you know, so therefore, the fewer people we can keep from getting this thing until at some point down the road, hopefully there's a vaccine and we stay safe. But right now, we appreciate your effort. If you're home and you're taking that effort, it's greatly appreciated. You're really doing the right thing. I'm not a person who talks about being a good person usually, but this about fits my definition of being a good person. If you're trying to keep yourself out of circulation so that you don't get sick and other people don't get sick. So let's keep at it. I know it sucks. And hopefully there'll be a football season so we can all take our minds off of this nonsense.
Amen to that. I'm going to rewatch Super Bowl 49 tonight. I'll tell you that right now.
You know what's unfortunate is that Al actually has to live in my house now.
I hope you and your family are sheltering in place.
Because Al lives overseas. And he's basically stuck here. There's no getting out. So, yeah. So it's my family now. We're sheltering in this place. Yeah. And, we're all doing the best we can.
God forbid.
All right. Well, that was a fun way to end this show.
Let's discuss plague, pestilence, and sheltering in place.
We should probably make an effort to do more of this because, it just sucks. It gives us something to do. It gives people out there something to listen to. And it is really tough to wrap our heads around right now. All I can think about is like, I can't believe it's only Tuesday this week. And
oh, so right.
You know, like I can't believe it. And we just, time is the thing that we need. We need to grit through it and let time do what it can, but we're going to feel it. We're going to feel like every minute of this thing. So Debbie Downer signing off from Entitled Town.
I want to remind everybody, let's finish on a little bit of an upbeat note.
I think I'm going to edit out everything after R2-D2 suit.
I think that's probably good. I just want to remind everybody, send us an email, entitledtown@gmail.com. The Twitter account is at entitledtown. Send us a DM, send us an email. We're going to bounce some ideas off each other. I think, like I said, I'm working kind of long hours right now. The business that I'm in is doing some good work in helping people get things that they need. But yeah, I think we all could use good content, the emphasis on good content, but you know, we'll at least try to provide some content just to help stave the madness away. So turn off your radios, turn on a good podcast, and also this one.
Okay. I think we've done a podcast. I think you saved it. I think my maudlin minute is not going to be a regular feature. So
go get an Al stash. You'll feel better.
This was like a bad episode of MASH. This episode. It was like,
well, let's not end with Suicide is Painless, the theme song.
Right. Yeah. Okay. No, let's not do that at all. Like it was all going along. So it was all going along fun. Hawkeye was telling some jokes. And then the next thing you know, it's like, you know,
I got some more Bedard material. If you really want to dive into that,
you have more material.
I have more Bedard material.
Like a new development or
no. I can rehash old shit on him all day though.
Just you vouching more.
Yeah. I'll continue to vouch for, I'll almost vouch for him. How's that?
For Eric Bedard?
Yeah, left-handed mariner, yeah.
Okay. I like to think of him as, I'll always be an Oriole in my heart. Okay. Well, I think we've done this podcast. I think we'll be back. And, you know, take it easy, folks. Just keep binge-watching Sopranos and then move on to The Wire. And then do Mad Men, and then Breaking Bad, and then you know, then get jiggy with it. Do something like The Good Wife, or what's a show that you like?
You just vouched for The Good Wife.
Well, I'm saying if you're gonna be hunkered down for a while, after those four shows, you know, you got to mix it up. You got to get something that's a little.
My friend John just sent me a text. He's binge-watching the Golden Girls.
Dude, Golden Girls, that's fine. You know what I mean? You need some laughs. Go go throw Party Down. If you haven't seen Party Down, go watch that. There aren't that many episodes, but what else? What's another show people could watch?
I've been rewatching Cheers. Seinfeld's always on tap for me. Yeah, I'm a basic bitch when it comes
Seinfeld,
to
Seinfeld, The Office, all classics.
Office doesn't hold up for me much after season 4 or 5 anymore.
Still, go watch the first 5 seasons. Simpsons, all those Simpsons episodes on Disney Plus. You know, at some point you might get sick of it, but then you just flip over, watch something else.
The overarching theme, once again, is turn off your radios. And I would like to say one more thing before we sign off, Dave. Welcome back, Scartsy. Welcome back.
Yep, good to have Scartsy back. But all right, I think we're good. What are we on to?
We're on to the unknown.
We're on to Jarrett Stidham, I think.
Big if true. You are right. It's going to be an interesting year for damn sure.
All right, everybody. Bye for now.